We have been discussing Davar HaAved, an exception to the right of the pull to withdraw. We saw that the Rishonim and Poskim seem to set a very low threshold for what constitutes Davar HaAved. In some cases, it sounded like the threshold is almost too low. Does that sound familiar from Tuesday? Yeah?
Yeah.
We had some back and forth, exactly what the criteria are. It's something that has to be time-bound. Does it have to be that you'll suffer some substantial loss, or you know something will be destroyed, the yiskalkel? Well,
having his will be thwarted.
That's right. His will is going to be thwarted. You're putting it very nicely now. We saw some examples in the post game, the Shulchan Aruch and the Shach, about the Melamed and the Sofer, why those might constitute Davar HaAved. What we left off with was this great tshuva, the Marit, where he said that, you know, remember, you have this phenomenal Rebbe that everybody loves, that just in virtue of the fact that everybody loves him and he's irreplaceable, I guess, in virtue of his charisma and his explanatory skills, his pedagogy, like that makes him into Davar HaAved, the fact that you're not going to have him anymore. He said, you know, Ein Adam Lo Meidel B'Makom Shelibo Chafetz, Lav Mikol Adam Zoche Lilmo Torah. Right? And so when somebody has these special features, that's just going to like make him into a Davar HaAved because he's irreplaceable. And so we thought that was a very low threshold. I want to just continue with that discussion and give a few more examples today before we turn to get into the Mechayiv or the underlying explanation for why there's liability in Davar HaAved. So if you look here on page 40, you have the Tshuva of the Binyamin Zev. Yeah? So the Binyamin Zev in Siman Reish Chaf Hei has an interesting tshuva about this shliach tzibur, this guy who was both a shliach tzibur and a gabbai tzedaka. He was hired for a certain number of years. And it sounds like in the middle of the year, the board of the shul fired him. Binyamin Zev is late Ashkenaz, like late, you know, 16th century.
1475.
Okay, he probably died in the 16th century, no? Okay, so I'm not so far off. So he's a gabbai tzedaka and a shliach tzibur. He was fired by the board. Mamune HaKohol said, we don't want you anymore in the middle of the term. But then it sounds like the Anshe HaKohol, Huksha Be'enehem V'lo Nisratu, Elaratzi Shetamod Imahem. Right, the members of the community they overrode the board's decision. They said, we want you to stay. So actually part of this tshuva, you're trying to figure out the... who's in charge? Is the board members, they represent the will of the people, or do they have like separate power because they were elected by the people? That's like not really related to our discussion, but it's interesting. Yeah. Or even a halachic question about how it works. Sugim Babasar, Ashayim B'nai Yer Lamed Al Kitzasan. Maybe we'll do Babasar next year, we'll see. Well, maybe we'll stick with Bamitzia. Well? So he says, and then he considers the fact, he says, hey, this guy's a Poel, maybe a Poel has the right to back out. But then he says he shouldn't have a right to back out in this case, and you can see the underlines beginning, Amdam Nezel Idach Gisa, go the other way. Yeah, you're wanting to read it from Ben Nomar.
The Nomar, Kevin Shah, called Toanim She'ena Muslim She'a Tibor Begabit Sak Kamocha, Atala.
Lem Sa'as Hashanah.
Thank you.
Yeah, so he ends up saying, like, no, like, actually, you don't have a right to withdraw because since the people are claiming that you're irreplaceable, then it's like a Davar HaAved for them. So I think this is actually very similar to what we just saw in the Marit, arguing that if you have these, like, special features that they don't think you're replaceable, then that's a Davar HaAved. And even though you might say, okay, get somebody else to daven, right? Get somebody else to daven and get somebody else to collect stuff. But what do you mean this guy is a special guy?
Could it be more, financial than here? Like, if it's got... Well, she have to see
more can be, so that would... Right, it's clearly not a...
Because, like, God, it's not good. You could say, like, maybe he's, like, really good at, like fundraising.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it depends if the gabbai is the fundraiser or is he just literally like the treasurer.
I feel like if they're really clamoring about the gabbai, it's like, if not the guy.
Yeah, right. He's just so good.
Right? Like,
we like the great shliach tzibur, you know.
Yeah, no, so that's why I think it's probably not financial. before.
Right, right. But I think this is in line with
the Maharit
that we just saw. Yeah.
So an interesting clue you can make is when did they, I guess you can make this like clue the longest actually, when did they realize when they're replaceable?
Because when did they realize? Only now.
Cause around, it was like, and then had like, oh, you're replaceable.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I think it would be sufficient that even right now they appreciate that he's irreplaceable, right? Because for Devar Aved, I would think that it doesn't matter. The time of the contract is not relevant. What's relevant is right now, are we going to suffer some sort of loss? That's my intuition. All right, so Devar Aved is a here and now consideration. Look here at the next source, Chumash Hadashin Siman Shin Chaf Tes. I love this Chumash Hadashin. On page 41, okay? And it gets like, this generates a whole discussion in the Achronim. Donnie, you want to read the Chumash Hadashin Shin Chaf Tes?
Yeah.
So you have a Gvir, right? A wealthy guy. He hires a housekeeper or a nanny or something, and the nanny wants to breach in the middle. Guys, a Gvir, what does he know about, you know, putting food in the oven, washing dishes, or doing laundry, right? If the nanny or the housekeeper is not doing it, it's all gonna all hell's gonna break loose. I love this, right? So the guy doesn't know how to. If he starts washing his dishes, he's gonna break all the glasses. And if he does the laundry, all the clothes are gonna be destroyed. Right. So, you know, so it's very interesting. He's saying that look, if the nanny, the homekeeper is gonna back out, it's Devar Aved. It's kind of a strange explanation because if you do the jobs yourselves, you're going to end up suffering a loss because you don't really know how to do them. And so he thinks that it is a Devar Aved and you're able to be Sochalem. He concludes the Bitzarachim, which is interesting. We'll see that generates some discussion in the later post game.
Yeah, it seems really expansive, even more expansive than we talked about.
Yes.
It's not only that you're irreplaceable, but it's like, Without anyone.
Yeah, it's like almost like a grumma.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, hey, if you're not here, I could do the jobs. I'm not going to be able to do them, you know, as well or something. Mm-hmm. And that's Devar Aved. We'll see. I think actually let's just look at this Machane Ephraim, and then I'll take your comment, Noah. Machane Ephraim in Schiras Polim Simin Zayin, he quotes the Chumash Hadashin. You can see he's about this Balabai, Shesachar Mishareses, and Michola Hamishareses Lachzer Batoch Hazman. This is always the question, right? You know, everyone's worried about their like housekeeper backing out. You know, if you have kids, it's really an issue. You know, it's like you got to get to work, and what if you're relying on your babysitter, and if the babysitter's not there, you're stuck, you're messed over for the day, right? Adam, right?
You need your au pair,
right? So look what he says. He quotes the Chumash Hadashin, and then he says, "Vanias daiti nira da filu below taima de takala," even without the argument that, you know, without your housekeeper, you're going to end up breaking the dishes or destroying the laundry. Mikri Devar Aved. It's still considered a Devar Aved. Keeping the Balabayas v'ishto inam murgalim lasos malacha did to al yadam. V'achshev shechozeres hamishareses milasos malachtam yis'achru. Harezem mikri Devar Aved. V'lo gara me'asocher po lavi chalilin sha'afa pishu lo yavi yinkan hefsin mamon. V'kamakom kimen shem yis'achren ma'isav lo matzi lachzor. Sounds like the Machane Ephraim wants to argue. What? I catch
that.
Yeah, the mere fact that you're going to be set back. Now, I don't know if he means, like in my case, like if my nanny doesn't show up, then that means I lose a day of work because I have to stay home. Or does he mean that, oh, my nanny's very efficient with like doing all these home chores, and if I were to do them, it's going to take longer. It's the same idea, the same underlying idea is that you're set back. But his point is that you don't need hefsid mamon like the Chumash Hadashin implies. It's sufficient that it's going to cost you some opportunity cost in the time that you have to invest now. And that's sufficient to constitute a Devar Aved. So again, I think this lowers the threshold even further, right? Donnie's like, what's going on here? What happened to Yachal Po'al Lachzor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's been taken off the table,
yeah.
Right?
No.
It's easy to argue that everything. What's not a double other?
You're going to have to go out and find someone after.
Right. Right.
Okay. I think I'd rather than not make it almost like sort of fixing up the true sedation in a way.
Making it stronger.
No, I mean, like, the true sedation left like very open, and not kind of find that she sort of gives way to how, like, how can someone actually attract if there's no remedy? It's all about time. Meaning, right, the issue of her trapping right now is that
it's going to cost you.
If the cost is in time, like, you need to find someone else to do the job.
Yeah. So he gives you an out at least. He gives you an out at least. Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
I think that's true. That is true. But on the other hand, at least the Tumas Hadeshim was pointing to more of a concrete loss. Here the loss is softer, right? Oh, it's just a delay as opposed to like, oh, I'm going to end up losing my dishes or laundry or things like that. Noah.
Yeah, so I was wondering if there's like some sort of...
You like the Tumas Hadeshim or...
I like the Tumas Hadeshim. I was wondering if there's some sort of like hybrid between the Tumas Hadeshim and Imachon Ephraim in like a case where not doing the task will not lead to loss, but the lack of maintenance will lead to future
loss
of value. So like if like you have you hire like a mechanic to do an oil change on your car. So like not doing that oil change doesn't cause you direct damage, but like in like 3 months from now or 5 years.
So
you
wear on the engine. That's a nice point. I think that might also constitute insofar as not having it done now is going to cause you to incur some loss later on, that would be davar of it. I think that's
more about my friend than Shemana Desh.
Yes, like Yisachru or...
Yeah.
The point is that there's some cost associated with it.
Yeah.
Right, and I guess you still have to say it's an immediate cost because like it has to be done today in order for me not to suffer that I guess engine friction loss now, right? Which is going to end up taking a toll later on.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think that would be a good davar avid, even though it may not qualify as nezikin,
right.
Which we'll talk about. Which I think that's an important distinction. Adam,
the other thing also about that with the Machmir Prime deals with the issue of how well it's brought into possession. He's like, it's a sort of ridiculous to make that claim because that's not even guaranteed loss. But you can't make the assumption just because.
No, I think he's saying I think he's saying near da filu below time of the takala, even without having to show that you're going to suffer a monetary loss, you could still make it a davar aved in virtue of your being set back.
Right, because I think he thinks the claim of that is a davar aved.
It's too far.
It's too far because like that's not really
right.
Going to happen.
It's less. I mean, it's less persuasive.
Yeah, if they think they're actually going to break their dishes, they're just not going to do their dishes.
Right. That's. What, I think that's why the Machane Ephraim
is.
It's an expansion, right? He's saying that you're going to have more cases where the Chazar, the Mashareses, will be considered a davar aved, right?
But that's what I think he's actually.
Because you don't need to show that it's just that you're actually going to break something. Everyone's delayed when their housekeeper doesn't show up.
Yeah, but there's a more concrete. I think there's a more concrete definition.
It's less concrete of a loss, but I guess it's more real, right? It's more plausible of a davar aved.
Yeah.
Shulchan Aruch Paskins. This is the Rama in Siman Shin Lama Gimel Hey. You can see in the middle of the page. Mishares eso eved shabala bayis mikri davar aved. The bala bayis lo yuchal lasos malacha beatzmo. That's his passing the Tumas Hadeshim. The Shach, interestingly enough, in Sifkat and Chav Gimel, gets very upset that the Rama left out the Vitzar Achim that the Tumas Hadeshim had. You can see that the Tumas Hadeshim himself wasn't so sure about it. So the Shach's a little upset. How did you get from the uncertainty of the Tumas Hadeshim to the certainty of the Rama? He says, "If the Tumas Hadeshim misayim b'zeh mikol makom davar zeh tzar achim v'lo yedana lama kasav ha-Beis Yosef." How did the Beis Yosef pass in this? And then the Rama puts in a Shulchan Aruch if it's just a tzarachin in the Tumas Hadeshim himself. And then he quotes actually the Rashdam, who says that Kimon Shat Tumas Hadeshim Kasa Besof Tzarachin Im Kein Hadinim Asachir Damot Mechaber Al Varaya. Says, insofar as there's no halachic certainty at this Davar Aved, it's Mot Mechaber Al Varaya, and the halacha should always favor the worker. Because the Baal Bais would have to prove. So he's saying, look, the default is that the worker has a right to withdraw. The motzi over here is the Baal HaBayis who's arguing that the right to withdraw doesn't apply because davar aved, motzi mechaber al varaya. And so the Rashdam thought that because the Tumas Hadeshim left the Bitzar Achiyin, you the worker would have a right to withdraw. So the Shach's upset with the Rambam for that. Then he says, "Open near the Hakol Lufiyah Lufi Rose Ani Adayin." You know, I guess in all these things, there's got to be some discretion that the judge has to decide: is this really a davar aveid? Is it not? It's kind of interesting when poskim throw this in, right? To say like we don't know what the formal criteria are, but I guess you have to assess it on a case by case basis. The Nesivus here quotes the Shach, and he wants to defend the Rama passing the Chumas Hadeshen while omitting the Tzarachian. So look what he says. This is the Nesivus in Sifkat and Ches. Lufin yez daiti nira. Shat Chumas Hadeshen lo nistapik, rakim chashev kidabar ha'avod shel mamon. Ula inyan sheyia yachal iskra lehen afilu lo basa chavil yado. Aval vadai de chashev dabar ha'avod she'eno shel mamon. So he's kind of weighing in on this debate between the Machane Ephraim and the Chumas Hadeshen. Remember, the Chumas Hadeshen thought that it's actual monetary loss, like Ibud Mamon, and the Machane Ephraim was saying even if it's less than monetary loss, it puts you back, right? So like the Ritva said there are two different kinds of Davar Aved. So the Nesivus is saying the Chumas Hadeshen was only mistopic about whether there's real monetary loss, kind of for the reasons that Adam was pointing out, right? Is there really monetary loss when your housekeeper isn't shut? That he's misipik about. But he was never misipik about the fact that it's davar aved in virtue of the fact that it's going to put you back in some way. And so that's what the Ramah's paskening. The Ramah's really paskening that there is davar aved, and that Chumas Hadeshen was certain about. Whether it's davar aved of Ibn Mamon, that's kind of what we're not sure about. We'll see later on there's an afkamina between davar aved shel Ibn Mamon and davar aved of just putting you back. Right, whether post facto you could be compensated for a monetary loss. Everybody agrees, socher le'en omatan, l'chatchila. The shaila is, after the fact that you suffered a loss, could you recover the, which we'll talk about later. Good. Everyone with me? Yeah. Let me just make a hara here. The Pischei Choshen actually takes this shach, and he says, it's just a general rule whenever it comes to davar aved, that it's biakol lefi ro'os eini adayin. That there's going to be some subjectivity in defining what exactly davar aved is. Like, there are no hard, fast rules to decide when something's davar aved. So I guess it's like a case-by-case determination. The Shach, he bases this off the Shach. I think the Shach he might have thought is limited to the Chumas Hadeshen's case, maybe. But he expands it as like a general rule for interpreting davar aved. So it sounds like there's a lot of flexibility. Which makes sense, right? I mean, because davar aved, I guess, really depends on each person's, like, what their opportunity costs are, and I guess what's considered, what their expectations are. So I don't think it's such a chiddush, but yeah, Noah, and then Yair.
If you were sitting on Beit Din, and there's a din Torah that comes up, and someone's trying to make a taina about davar aved,
yeah,
how would you try to deal with that question?
So I guess along these parameters, right? So. Does it set your back in your schedule? Is there some kilkel, notwithstanding everybody's objection to my reading of the Sma on Tuesday? Maybe I'll drop the kilkel question. But, you know, are you suffering financial loss? Are you put back in your schedule? Is there some, like, embarrassment? Just like in the wedding, you know, it's like there's no monetary loss, but it frustrated his expectations. So along those parameters.
Would it also include like what the norms are in the marketplace?
For sure. I think it's like whether like that's considered enough. So for example, remember on Tuesday, you weren't here on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Right, so on Tuesday the question was, you know, a wedding without a band, that's like a davar aved. But like a wedding without like the fancy alcohol or something, you know, maybe that's not, like there's still a wedding, you know, so that's not davar aved if the alcohol guy doesn't deliver, you know. So I think it will depend on like these reasonable expectations. We saw on Tuesday we saw like really broad formulations like kol shelo nasis ritzono is davar aved. I thought it was too strong, right? So along those lines.
I've seen these formulations before, like a kol lefi ro'os eini adayin.
You've seen it before, or?
But presumably the animal will also have some criteria that they look for. So does that mean like, well, there's criteria, but like no individual criterion is binding. Like really what we're looking for is a sort of sense.
Holistic.
Right. But like, Meaning it's sort of deliberately that fuzzy that like.
Wait, let me see. Like, what does he gain by Colifirosine and dying? Is that what does that add?
Right. Yeah, I guess that's the question.
Yeah, I mean, look here on 41 to 42, really the top of 42, the Pisrei Choshen, right? This is how he introduces it. He says, Kvar nizboyer, shebechal davar avod, lav davki ben mamon, kol davar shuchash of the balabayis, like dechazar sapol lo yasef izman, or izak davar avod, right? Then he gives the example of the melamed tinokos, the sofer, mishares, and he says, v'akol if you rose in yadayin.
Right, and he could mean two things there. One thing you could mean is that I'm not going to list every single profession that's a Dabar HaAved, every single profession that's not a Dabar HaAved.
Right. So it's like,
go ask your local Dayan and they'll figure it out for you. But there are fixed criteria to determine what an Aved is. I'm just not going to list every example because it's not feasible.
Right.
The other option, which is what Shach is getting at, is that no, there's like, there's this flexibility about even what constitutes Aved.
Yeah, I think it's more the latter, right?
Not sure how the Pisrei Choshen is using it. I think on the Shach it's clear.
Hakol hu lefi ha'inyan. The few rows and yeah, dying. Like it really kind of just depends on like
that's a shock, for sure.
What kind of thing it is, and you know, I guess how it's assessed, right? So, you know, you have to figure out like how bad is a wedding. So maybe like if it's like you live in a very fancy community where you know not having the right kind of alcohol is like a real, you know, that really upsets the wedding. You know, no one's gonna enjoy a wedding the same way. Well. Yeah, it's Dalton. They're very into their kiddush club. So maybe that's what he means, right? Meaning, yeah, it's hard to know. There's no clear standard for what, like, how high on your scale of preferences did this have to be such that it constitutes a devar avod for you're not having it. It's not like that. Right? He's saying you just have to, I guess, cheshbin based off, like, what the norm, kind of what Noah's saying based off the norms of the society.
Are you weighing this by, like, if you're the dying, are you weighing this by itself? The main rule is that if you hope is allowed to be there. Like, I don't know, it seems like that, like, this rule, that rule is kind of being thrown out, and then I'm just focusing on this Dabar HaAved, which could be really any
broad
and
It sounds like you're asking, is there a presumption that Dabar HaAved should be limited so as to preserve the right of a
Yeah, meaning, could that be part of your...
Yeah, I would think so. That's more of just like a legal. That's more of just like a pure halachic question rather than an application to any case. Notice that I think that really depends on this on the analysis that we've been doing today and on Tuesday. Because insofar as poskim feel totally comfortable overriding the rishus of the po halachzor, then that's just what the rule is, right? It's eclipsed in some cases by. What's interesting about the Rashdam that the Shach quotes that he thinks Motzi Mechaveri Lev Araya will apply because the default is Yochel Po Alasa.
The first person to bring that up.
Right, so I think that's in the direction of your comment, which is look, there's a fundamental default Po Yochel Alasa. If you want to override that by Dabar HaAved, right, then you have to prove it. So I think that speaks to the point that you're making now that there still is a fundamental presumption in favor of the Rishus Lachzor.
Some people, I guess, would not agree with that. Like,
right. Like, yes, 100%. There are two, if there were markers here, I would say you could say there are two different ways of conceptualizing the relationship between Poel Yochel Lachzor Bo and Dabar HaAved in Yochel Lachzor Bo. The Marashdam's way is to think that Poel Yochel Lachzor Bo is the fundamental rule. It's overridden in a few cases by Dabar HaAved, but you have to prove that it's Dabar HaAved to override the rule. Right? The other way of looking at it is like, no, neither is more fundamental than the other. We're just trying to define the scope of when the Poel Yochel Lachzor Bo applies. We know it applies when non-Dabar HaAved. We know it doesn't apply when it is Dabar HaAved. It's not that there's like a rule that's overridden by something else. Right? We're just trying to define the scope of application of Poel Yochel Lachzor Bo. Right? But there's no general presumption that he could... There's only a presumption that he could withdraw when it's clearly not a Dabar HaAved. Right? Okay. Good. Let me get out. So, any other comments on this?
Just like a technical note, when you said that the Shach took issue with the Ramah, which Ramah is that? The Shulchan Aruch? I didn't see the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch.
Oh, that's the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch and Shin Lamed Gimel Hei about Mishar Eses is the Ramah. Bayerlein does an awful job. Yeah, they have an awful job. They don't distinguish between the font of the Ramah and the font of the Mechaber. Right. You see, it's run by a bunch of Ashkenazi. They don't want to preserve the hierarchical Sephardic superiority of the Ashkenaz.
You've drawn all the Torah. I think they do that now. They put
their
mind in Rashi's script.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Who does?
Pretty sure. Yeah. All the Torah. Do you know that?
That's a different app.
Yeah,
it's
not. So the one I work for.
He's working for it?
We worked together.
Is that different from Safaria? Is that
so much better?
They're more from.
Oh, yeah.
No, because the people who started Safaria are like not religious.
Right.
And, like, these people are he taught them YU. He's like obsessed with like getting the best text. And,
interesting.
Like,
how does that affect Safaria though? The content of Safaria, the fact that they're not religious.
Safaria has a lot more.
Safaria has a lot more, and they have a lot bigger.
But their translations are worse.
Safaria for now.
They've been trying to buy Alator for a long time.
Oh yeah.
Nothing,
but I'm saying, is there a virtue in using Alatora because it's firmer? Like, is it
like
is Safaria changing Dinim in the Shofanar?
No, they care about the text. They'll just throw out the text like, ooh, it's up there. Like, they're looking at old manuscripts.
Back in the good old days,
Oh, you're saying it kind of looks like a Shofanar.
No, they call Mikros-Sidolos. They do Mikros-Sidolos
cool.
Shots.
They also have more thematic Artanach. They have all these
if you go
second
you can change it so it's actually Rashi's.
All right, but let's get back to the Lima.
That's my point.
Well, because we'll next time we'll start. You know. But basic, right?
All the years are fundraiser and they're positive.
Yeah, all in one. Okay, so let's look at two more examples of Davar HaAved, just to get a more traction on how it's been applied. Machane Ephraim and Siman Zion applies it to a Meinekes, I guess a wet nurse, is that what they call it?
Yeah.
So again, so Misha Sachar Meinekes, Lahanekes Beno, Michol Lachzer, Tochazman, Ayin Shavus Rashba. The near the whole lachzabav lechor near dim ena motzei minekas acheres lanika hareza chashuv davar aved. Right, so you don't have formula and you need a woman to nurse the child. If she can't find a replacement, she's not allowed to back out because it's a davar aved. I guess who's gonna? That's not clear to me if this is the case where the mother can't be miniko aspina, or otherwise the kid's gonna starve or something, or it just means that it's gonna be inconvenient or something.
Well, can the mother's restart again?
Right, probably not.
Once you stop.
So I guess Lahenik, right. Lahenik here, I guess, probably means a Meinekes, not...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Right. A Meinekes means not just a nurse, right? I guess it probably means actually to nurse, feed the child.
Isn't that what it is?
Yeah, I think that's what it traditionally is. Not in our post-formula society. I think the last line here is a little crazy. Look what he says. V'yantensi lomar di cholo lachzer ba. So it's not clear what that would turn on, right? That what now it's suddenly not a davar aved. He says, "Kol shehikna gufa lechalva, eini yechol lelachzor v'litin achalav la'acher shari kvar konu l'rishon." So he's going in strong on kinyan gufa. You could hire her to be kona the chalav, you're hiring her gufa lechalva, in which case she has no right to leave because you have a kinyan haguf on the chalav. It's kind of a strange way of looking at it, right? He's saying there's a way to structure it so that you're not hiring her nursing services. You're actually making a kinyan haguf on her with respect to her challah. That wouldn't survive in the post-Me Too world, probably. But it's an interesting way. It's an interesting way of structuring.
Does she have to actually nurse? What if she pumps? And then,
right. It's interesting enough to me now, right? So... she doesn't have the duty to provide the service. She just has the duty to provide the good.
Yeah.
The good.
What if she's no longer able to produce milk? The Gemara thinks when a woman gets pregnant, nekar dam nasechalav. So the opposite is true. If she's no longer nursing, so then just blood.
I don't think logical.
Okay.
That was more of a joke.
I think what's two takeaways from the Machane Ephraim. One's important for our sugya that he thinks that I mean, that guess would be considered Dabar Avod. Then he has this other sheet that's relevant, something we discussed earlier in the year, that even if you don't want to structure it as a service agreement, you can structure it as a sale of the actual chalav, and then you have a kinyan aguf in her chalav, such that she can't back out of. Because the din of Kili B'nei Yisrael Avodim doesn't apply to like a sale of the good. It only applies to the service. Yair, you have a comment? Or
maybe it's not one, but you think that a standard halal is not, does not have kinyan aguf. And only in this case, where there's actual something like
I think a standard halal might have a kinyan aguf, but Kili B'nei Yisrael Avodim allows the chazara. Right, so it's hikne gufa l'chalva. You have a kinyan in her person.
You have a kinyan in person.
Why not?
You have a kinyan in
the... You came too late. You came too late earlier in the year. I mean, we spent a lot of time showing that. A lot of people, right? Yair, you want to... A lot of people conceive of a poel as gufo kanoi. That's what makes the poel relationship tick.
But this type of sentence. Like, this is another sentence. Like,
this is gufo l'chalva. This is a subset of a kinyan aguf, only with respect to the chalav. And it sounds like he's thinking that actually, even if you have a... This is actually really important. He's thinking that the only time you have a zchus chazara from Kili B'nei Yisrael Avodim is if it's like a full kinyan aguf. But if it's a guf l'chalba, then Kili B'nei Yisrael Avodim wouldn't apply. Right? Isn't that the sense you're getting from the Machane Ephraim?
Yeah.
Right? Because the whole point is that, does it apply? Is it Dabar Aved? Oh, but even if you have a zchus lachzar in general... That's only if it's a kinyan aguf legamri. If it's hiknit, but if it's just gufa lechalva, in yichol lachzar. Which is interesting.
This seems more like a kabbalah than a poel.
In the last case.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's the idea, right? You're kone like a, you're not kone a service, and that's why Kli B'nei Yisrael Avodim doesn't apply. But you might think anytime there's a kinyan aguf, then there's like a kind of avodos.
Yeah.
Right? And a kabbalah, you'll just say it's a case there's no kinyan aguf. Here there's a kinyan aguf le'inyan chalva, so it's like an interesting middle ground. Yeah. Some achronim earlier in the year construed the poel relationship as a kinyan aguf le'inyan melachto. That's how they understood it. And this is like, it seems to be a subset of that. It's kinyan aguf le'inyan chalva. Okay. The last example of just the what would constitute davar ha'aved comes from the Tosefta in Bab Metzia Perek Yud Aleph, towards the end of the Masechta, Halacha Chaf Zayin. Tosefta starts Masha Hayah, probably should be Misha Hayah Balon. Ben, did you get a chance? You want to read the Tosefta for us? Or?
Sure.
Great.
Sure, Shinada.
Yeah, 42. Page 42. Misha Hayah Balon, Masha Hayah Balon.
That was good.
You see it or no?
42.
I have it highlighted here. What? I'll just read it. Misha hayabalam le rabim, sapar le rabim, nachtom le rabim, shulchan le rabim. So this guy basically he works for the community. He's the communal chef, he's the communal baker, he's the communal haircut guy. The ain sham acher elohu, the higia shas haregel, and the vakesh lelech lesoch beso. So basically, it's busy time in the community, right? Everybody needs their challahs for Yontif. This guy's like, I want to check out and go home early to get ready with my family. So the Tosefta says that he's not allowed to leave until he finds a replacement because the community is really depending on him. So the Pesachei Choshen points out, and this is really based off the Aruch HaShulchan, that the idea here is that it's a kind of a davar ha'aved, right? It's the community is depending on him for everyone to have their Shabbos and Yontif goods, and if he backs out, they'll all be at a loss. They won't be able. Is that a coronavirus sneeze?
It's a different strain.
Right. Okay.
The regular one.
Right.
The regular one.
I'm gonna have to call up Mike Pence. He's in charge. So the community is depending on him, and therefore. And therefore, he's not allowed to back out, right? So pretty interesting, right?
Yeah.
So the Pesach Choshen here says, he says, "Uchein ze kasa baruch hashulchan shepoel eitzel chayot osandlar sheikar hamlocha be'er b'chag inu yachal lachzor be'er b'chag." Suppose you're a cobbler or you're a tailor, and you know that everybody in the Jewish community brings their stuff in right before Yom Tov. That's like busy season. So if you're an apprentice or a worker in that shop, you can't back out during busy season, because that's a kind of dover ava, based off the same argument.
That's only if you made a deal with them before, right? Like, you can't, it's like if you've already said, like, oh, you're going to give me a haircut this day. But it can't be, right?
Right. I mean, is he... Meaning, like... Let's say you put up a sign saying, I'm closed on Fridays. They can't compel you to work on Friday.
Right?
Right. No. But I think if you usually are open... Let's say you have a sign that says, I'm open till an hour before Shabbos, an hour before Yom Tov.
Yeah.
It sounds like they're saying that you're not allowed to shut down or before that.
Even if someone didn't hire you yet,
right. That's what it sounds like.
Contract? Like,
right.
That seems,
right.
Like,
unless the expectations.
Yeah, unless you're saying like it's almost like a communal contract or something like that. But
so, Donna, you're raising a very important point that we're going to get to in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And that is, does the logic or does the principle of Davar HaAved ever apply outside of contractual agreements?
Yeah.
Arguably, one well?
I said that would also be the extension Nezek.
Oh, is this like a Nezek issue or is it a contract issue? Yes, that's exactly one of the important questions here. But even if you don't go the Nezek route, you could still say there's an implied understanding that if I'm the guy who supplies these goods in the community... And I'm usually open, right? So then it's reasonable for other people to rely on me, and there's like an assumed...
Which could be, like, it's just not a formal contract.
It's an agreement based off minhag,
yeah.
Right? Something like that, as opposed to like an agreement based off like an explicit consent between the parties. Yes, exactly.
I think it really lends itself towards a... he could have all of them book fresh ever.
Yeah. So, interesting point. Very good, Adam. You'll see, actually, that... If you look here in the... So this is all cited in Aruch HaShulchan and Siman Taf Yud Zayin. Okay. If you look here on page 43, you get the Pesachei Choshen talking about this. Okay. So he says, the Pasha Pshat in this Tosefta is, just the highlighted section, right? The reason why the barber and the cobbler has to stay open in Erev Yontif is because it's Davar Avod, right? People are going to lose out if he's not there. But then he says, he quotes the Shevet HaLevi and the Shaar Beis Ephraim. Yeah, very good. Right, Adam, you nailed it. He says that their Mesupuk, one interprets this as a principle of Davar Avod, which would be consistent with our Sugya. But he says, the Shevet HaLevi Kasef Shezemi Din Takanas HaTzibur. Like, this is not based off a theory of contract and Davar Avod. No, this is like the Halacha's theory of public goods. Right? Like, there's a special takana to help out the community before Yom Tov, and that's why you're not allowed to close down. But nothing to do with our sugya in Asochar Sa'umnim. It's like the obligations that an individual has to the community. That's the Shevet HaLevi's argument. So there are really two ways of understanding this. If you go the way of Davar Avod, I think Donnie's right to say this is a chiddush that we're going to apply Davar Avod outside of explicit contractual agreements. Right, so it's an expansion of Davar Avod, not just in terms of the definition of Avod, but in terms of what background conditions have to obtain in order to hold somebody to a Davar Avod duty to stay inside the agreement or the requirement to provide the services.
And you're saying that there are two ways to understand the Shevet HaLevi.
No, there are two ways to understand the Tosefta that says that you're not allowed to leave before Yom Tov. One view is that it's because Davar Avod, you're contracted, or you know, you never could back out whenever there's going to cause a loss. The other way is that you could, mehilchos nezikin, mehilchos schiras polim, you could back out. But there's a special halacha that Chazal want to, you know, almost like an economic argument, like we've discussed in the past, that Chazal want to make it easier for people to be ready for Yom Tov. So they penalize the person who provides a public good and say you have to be open at this time before Yom Tov. Right, it's like an economic consideration, like Toelas at Sibor. There's no contract.
There's no contract, and it's like the person's not a poel at this point. Almost, it's more just like
good.
this is your communal standing, and like if you want to be part of the community, this is
excellent.
What you have to do.
Yeah, 100%. That's what the Shevet HaLevi is saying, right?
Yeah, look, it makes a lot more sense.
Look at this Shaar Ephraim here in the next source. He makes a similar argument. He quotes this Tosefta. And he says, it can't be a halacha and davar ha'avod, This is the Bashar Ephraim in Kuf Lamed Ches. And he quotes this interesting Hagos Maimonios in Perek Yidalef of Hilchos Tefillah, where the Maram says, he was asked, we had these communities in Europe that, you know, they had like 12 people. And if too many people went away for Yontif, they wouldn't have a minyan. You know, it's like the dying communities in the Bronx. You know? If people went away, you wouldn't have a minyan. So the question was, Imrotza Echad Mehem Lotzeis Mehair Kodem Yamim Norayim V'ein Shem El Minyan Mitzumtzam. The Marami Rutenberg Paskin Kofin Oso Sheyamid Acher Bimkomo. You weren't allowed to leave the community for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur unless you found a replacement to cover you for Shabbos. It's good halacha, no? To cover you for Yontif. Well, maybe Raya min Atosefta Zu, and he brings a Raya from this Tosefta that the cobbler and the tailor aren't allowed to leave Erev Achag. So he points out, if the Tosefta were a special halacha and davar ha'avod of a contract of Schiras Polam, it doesn't make any sense. How could you generate from that where a guy is providing services to a community to a case where you're just a member of the community who has to show up in shul? You're not a poel. Halo a Tosefta hanal ayri b'sachir v'kablan. Right. So if the Tosefta were a special halacha and davar ha'avod of Schiras Polam, it wouldn't make sense to generalize it to cases of leaving the community for Shabbos. So he says, oh, it must be that Marami Rutenberg at least understood, like the Shevet Halevi said. Shevet Halevi is much later than the Shaar Ephraim. The Shaar Ephraim is like late Ashkenaz, actually. It's like 1600s. Adam, what year is he? Very recently, right. Shevet Halevi is much. The Shaar Ephraim is already saying that sounds like it's a Takanas HaTzibur.
Oh, okay. So much Shaar Ephraim.
Right, so it sounds like it's Takana Tolas Tzibur. Yeah, you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. Now he also points out, and this is the bold section in the Shaar Ephraim, the Yesh Rotzim Lahamed Atosefta Hanal Besachir Okabon Behave Kedavar Aved.
1666.
What?
1667.
That's when he's born?
No, that's when he's only born. From 1619 to 1684.
Okay. 17th century. Okay. Consistently a century off. but so he quotes other people who read the Tosefta as just being a din in a sachir or a kablon and mitam davar ha'aved. Okay. By the way, he seems to say, and again we saw this in the earlier in the Maharit, that people who read the Tosefta as being a din in davar ha'aved further argue that davar ha'aved entitles you to be kofes somebody in specific performance. Right, because I think the Tosefta said, "Yecholin la'akiv al yadav." The Tosefta said you could force the cobbler and the barber not to leave, which implies not just that you could hire at their expense, but you could actually ma'akiv al prevent them from leaving. So he says, and this is already the Shaar Ephraim, that if you read the Tosefta as being a din in davar ha'avod, im ein motzin tmuraso. The Eino Yachol Lahatoso Kofen Esapoel Ligmor Malachta B'Davar Aved. So it's another raya that implicit in Sofar Leinu Matan is also the ability to compel specific performance. Okay, good. Adkan, that's really the various kinds of cases that come up in terms of compelling somebody to remain, or the range of cases that would constitute Davar Aved. We'll see, the next point I want to make is very much related, but this is just to give us a flavor, all these cases, of what constitutes davar aved according to these Rishonim and Poskim. Adam and then Noah.
Okay. Last time I brought this up, it was laugh down, but I'm going to extend.
Laugh down.
I'm going to laugh down. So okay. I'm just not taking it seriously. I'm going right. to
make
you laugh. I'm like, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
My life is
an unsafe space.
Yeah, but... Whenever in general, the concept of davar aved, it always seems to have this, like, to take the type of factor to it. I'm not sure.
We don't know what the underlying chayiv is.
Take, for example.
So far, we've just been describing when it's davar aved, you can't back out.
Right.
It could be an economic factor.
Right. It could be.
You know, right, exactly. It's an economic factor. But it seems exogenous to the true contract itself.
So I'm not sure
and
about
I don't
that.
I think it's so easy to say that that's for contract goodness.
I think it's an open question. We're going to see that actually in the next few sources. Yesh lachkor is the inability the poel to back out, does that stem from the binding nature of the contract? That implicit in the agreement is that I will have a duty to complete this if my breach would cause you a loss. So davar ha'aved is like a glue that makes the contractual relationship stronger. Or is davar ha'aved, as you say, exogenous? Is it some external principle of tort, of nezikin, that's making me liable for causing harm to you?
Right?
Not doesn't have anything to do with the contract. It's just the contract sets up the background condition where I induced you to rely on me. Some cases of induced reliance could give rise to tvios and nezikin. See the difference? And
look at
the lighter contract. So good. So to put it in lumdish terms, we have an open question whether davar ha'avod is a din in contracts, or is it a din in nezikin supervening on contracts?
Right. I mean,
and I would say tikkun olam is even his third principle, right? Tikkun olam is, Chazal made a special takana for a public good that we want this to be available.
I mean, it could be a little hard to sort of dive into tikkun olam in this case and nezek.
No, because I think tikkun olam would mean that it's not nezek, and Chazal just want to make sure that they want to ensure that these goods are available.
Tikkun olam is broader though, because tikkun olam applies to goyim in some instances.
Pasuk non-Jews, it also applies when. It may also apply when there's no harm. There's no real loss, right? Is my not getting a haircut for Yantif a harm?
Yeah. I'm not that you're not getting a haircut.
Your mother is.
But the idea that someone should have... I mean, like, in the case of the Gemara get it in prepared uses, the not
out of
context.
What
kind of program that was.
Talking about
like the idea of like... Well...
Burying non-Jews? Is that what we're talking about?
No, not burying non-Jews. It's like, if...
That's different kind of tikkun olam.
I
think tikkun olam here just means a toel sakal. I don't think it means anything more specific, like, you know, agunos and things like that, and which is what you're getting at.
I think like a principle that is removed, like you can't necessarily put it in this, and you can't necessarily put it in the contract theory, but the bottom of the need that there should exist some type of barrier to prevent people from trafficking from the general goodwill of society.
That's just some economic consideration.
Right, like
tikkun olam. That'd be like one idea of tikkun olam, meaning that all dinim of davar avad really stem from Chazal trying to, as Donnie said, you know, they want to shore up, they don't want contracts, they want to make sure people aren't harmed by relying on others. And so, tikkun olam, they said, oh, you're going to be liable, you can't back out in these cases. But that's like, as you put it, an exogenous takana.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, that's a possibility. Ben, you're...
That's for the exogenous takana.
You like that idea?
Yeah.
Okay. Because you like the word?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's never fun to be exogenous. It's always good to be exogenous.
What?
It's never fun to be exogenous. You always want to be exogenous.
Right. Okay. Good. So now I want to turn our attention to this machlokas in the Rashi and the Gaon Sashri. It's on the one hand related to what we've been discussing until now about what constitutes davar ha'avod, because this is a question about how we define davar ha'avod. But it's also going to begin to take a stand on what the underlying mechayiv for davar ha'avod is. Why is it that you can't back out? So we have a Rashba here in Bava Metzia and Bava Mebez. It's the Rashba's own chiddush, and he even presents it as a mistavrali. And he writes this chiddush in his discussion of davar ha'avod on the Gemara's line of Sochar Le'en Amadon. Ben, do you have the Rashba in front of you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So why don't you read the line in mistavrali? Yeah, what's he saying? Do you know what he's saying? Yeah.
I mean, what's it between?
Yeah. He's saying the only time something could be defined as a davar ha'aved,
right,
such that the poel will be on the hook to finish the job, is if what?
If there are other poelim too.
If there were other poelim available when? B'shehoya motzei polim achirim liskor. B'shehoya sachar es elu. So what is it? What's the standard, Ben?
If there were other people that he potentially could have hired when he hired the worker who's bagging it.
Exactly. Only then could it be considered davar ha'avod and the worker's liability. But if when I hired this worker who ultimately breached and messed me over, there were no other workers available to be hired, and he breached, he's not liable. Why? As he says, only in the case where I forewent hiring other workers relying on his promise can it be said that he was mafsid me by Shaharei Hefsidu. But if no other workers were available at the time that I hired him, my Hefsidu, what loss can it be said that he imposed upon me? So suppose I'm having a chasana. The chasana is already set for tonight. And I say, oh, I have a wedding tonight. I got to find a band. There are no musicians available except for Adam. And I say, Adam, will you play at the wedding? And Adam says, of course, I'd be very happy to. And then an hour before the chasana, Adam backs out. So the Rasha wants to say, is Adam liable?
I just don't think it's rock music.
If there's no one else, is he liable? What?
No, you're not liable.
He's not liable because he didn't mess me over. If anything, he was going to save me, and he just didn't end up saving me. Right? How can we say that Adam messed me over if absent Adam's involvement altogether, I would have suffered the loss anyway? Adam didn't cause the loss. The loss was going to come about in any event. So the idea is like this. If I need to hire a cab to get somewhere and there are no cabs available and I hire a cab and a guy says, oh, I'm going to come, and then he cancels on me, that's not davar avod, because to calculate davar avod, take the guy out of the picture and see, did he mess you over? And the Rashi wants to say, well, if you would have been messed over absent his participation, he didn't mess you over. He's not the cause. Does everybody see that?
Yeah. We've seen something like this earlier in the day.
What?
We were talking about...
Yes, we saw this in the Chazara of the Baal Bayis. Yes. It was a very similar consideration that was brought to bear. Mm-hmm. 100%. In the opposite case. Right?
Most people give you the Holly Ghost case.
What?
Give you the Holly Ghost case. It's okay, you only found out one person who encountered. I backed out. But like before I backed out, since you found me to play, are you on stage? You bought all the equipment.
So that's not a separate issue. Did he induce me to undergo expenses. Hold off on that. We'll talk about that separately. But I want to point out, are you guys sympathetic to the Rashba over here? It's an interesting argument, right? Saying it can't be a davar ha'aved if the loss was going to come about anyway, even without his participation. It's almost like a theory of causation, right? He didn't cause it if it was going to happen in any event. Right? My wife and I always have this discussion about when she's trying to, she always talking about like what specialty she was going to do in medicine, right? So people think like, oh, maybe like if you're like a cardiologist or something, like you're more like directly involved in like helping people, or if you're like an OB, than if you're doing something that's like not as like clear what your contribution is. So the Rashba's theory here is that that's not the right way. Well, this is why the discussion came about, right? You don't gauge your causal impact based off what you did, right? You gauge it based off what would have been happening absent your actions, right? So like you think I'm an OB, I cause all these children to be born healthily, right? You might say, well, that's not the right way to gauge your causal impact if
there's a thousand other.
Yeah, right, somebody else would have been doing the exact same thing, right? You're right, if you weren't here, somebody else would be doing it. So it's like an interesting question, like how to like reconstruct the theory of causation.
Yeah, everyone would have lots of pimples if it was if you were
that's right.
It's kind of like the sunk cost fallacy.
Well, the question is like almost like is it like is your contribution to cause something to mean like something that would not have happened absent your involvement, mm-hmm. or does it mean like the look, Lamaisa, you did it, right? Those are two different ways of thinking about it. The Rashba's here is taking a counterfactual approach, right? And so he's thinking it's not davar ha'aved if the loss would have come about absent your involvement altogether.
What would the Rashba say for like a huge qualitative?
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah,
like, in like the OB case. What? In the OB case or in the...
Yeah, or like the band case. Like you could get like the best band, like it's a 10...
Shweki, you could get Shweki.
Yeah. I don't like Shweki. 20. But you get that, or you get a one-man band.
Right, I think that, right, I think that difference would be a double of it, arguably. That would be a cold if he rose any of that on it.
Could be, yeah.
Right, I mean, that's like, is that the liquor, or is that...
I agree with that. Yeah.
Correct.
Because Rajma might say, no, it's like, it just needs to be done. Like, if there was an ability for it to have been done, I don't really care about the quality.
Right, so I think that's really...
that's a different question.
That's the earlier question, yeah. Right? That's... Well, in Dover Ovid, is it Niskalkel? Is it...
And that's the question, how does the Rosh see those things?
Right, correct. And that's, so, but it's separate from this point, yes, that he's saying, in order for it to constitute Dover Ovid, you have to check counterfactually and see what would have been done without it. Noah, did you had a comment?
Yeah, no, I was just going to mention that it's like very reminiscent of the sunk cost fallacy, in the sense that if there was no other workers available, so that...
Say he's a behavioral science guy.
Yes. Yeah, he never would have been able to get the work. Like, he already lost the money anyways, the money he invested anyways. But if there were other workers available at the time, so then he made a poor investment on top of, you know, inaccurate information, but he could have had this transaction work.
Yeah, I guess you could put it in those terms. I don't think it depends on, like, the sunk cost fallacy, like, any psychological, like, barriers of, like, how you think about losses. I think this is more of, like, an objective theory of, like, causation. Like,
I think that's part of the... I think it's part of the sunk cost fallacy, which is that you... that
the loss is already there.
Yeah, the loss already occurred.
What was the wrong information that he was under...
That this guy would do the job.
Right, but I don't think...
It's wrong information.
Right, is that right?
It's just like an assumption you hire someone that they're going to do the job.
I think this turns on questions of causation, or like, what's our metric for determining loss, right? Two ways of looking at it. Either it's about, did he cause the loss, or is it, was there a loss altogether, given that the loss was going to happen anyway, right? Whereas I think Ben's right to say that the fallacy that you're discussing is more about like the psychological... way of thinking.
It's misinterpreted because objectively there a loss was already caused.
Yeah, that's like a way. I'm fine with that formulation. I mean, think about how that relates to this next point.
Okay.
So there might be more relevant actually. Lagos Hashri disagrees with this Rashba. Just a little background for this Lagos Hashri. If you saw the Sugya, so you'll know the Gemara is a little complicated. The Gemara seems to say that Bedavar Aved Socher Aleinu Mavdan. That we know, right? You could always hire new workers and impose the cost on the old worker, or you could deceive the old worker and say you'll pay him triple and you only have to pay him the regular price. But it says that, the Gemara then says, but if you got his tools, if he left his tools like in your rishus and then breached, you could sell off his tools to cover your losses. Right? It's kind of like an interesting line in the Gemara. Like even Bidyevet, if you lost money, you could sell off whatever property he left in your rishus to cover your actual material losses from his breach. So the Gosa Shri is a little disturbed by the Gemara saying that you could only cover your losses, or the Gemara's implication that you could only cover your losses when he left tools in your rishus such that you could sell them off to cover your damages. He's thinking if the Machayiv here is that he caused you a loss, you should be able to sue him to recover damages whether or not he left tools in your rishus. That's kind of the background issue. He says, look, here's that Gosa Shri in Simon Bays, top of page 45. The Im Davar HaAved, She'al Yedei Gramaso Nasis Aved, Nirali Dechayavim L'Shalim Kol Hefseido Mishum Dina Degarmi. So notice, he says that if in a Davar HaAved case you're harmed by the breach, and the guy causes the breach, he has to pay whatever losses you suffer, mitam dina degarmi. So the basis of liability is?
Nezikin.
Yeah, Nezikin, 100% Yair. Right? He says, demai shna mi balabayishim garam laav sidan shechayiv. Right? It's a kind of hefsid that's caused by somebody gram at dina degarmi, Nezikin yirchayiv. Then he says, v'kashali, dilakaman amar gavay davar ha'aved, socher aleinu matan, ad kama socher aleinu ad kadeh scharan. Right, if he left his materials in your rishus, then you could sell that off and hire new workers, even at an exorbitant amount. My iria ba'asa, afilu lo ba'asa. Nami yischayv mishum dina degarmi. Why is the ability to recover losses contingent on his depositing his tools? Even if he didn't deposit them, you should be able to recover under a theory of nezek, dina degarmi. Okay? V'yesh lomar. Tehasa mairi. Our case of davar ha'aved must be a case where Dina Degarmi is not relevant. and there's really a non-nezek basis for liability. Be'inyan shelo garmu lo shum hefsed. The case of Davar Aved must be a case where the breach didn't cause the loss. Kigon sha'apishtan haya sharui kvar. The flax was already soaking before you hired the guy. Uvishah shehiskir elu lo hayu achirim mitsuyin. There was nobody else available to hire. Umikal makom kivan sheniskiru lo kvar tzrichin lasos. So he's saying the case of the Gemara of Davar Aved is by construction not a case where you're able to hire other workers. So by hypothesis, it's not a case where he's causing you a loss. Right? So there's no chiyuv mitam nezek. Why then is he chayav for the Davar HaAved if he would have suffered the loss even without him? What are the crucial six words? That's right. Kivan sheniske lo kvar tzrichin lasos. We don't gauge Aved based off what would happen had he not have entered the picture altogether. We define Aved based off the expectation that was set by his commitment to do the job. And relative to his commitment to do the job, it's Aved, it wasn't completed. So when I have a chasana, and I need somebody to be a band for the wedding, and I want to figure out, is the breach of the singer Davar Aved? The Rashba says you have to go back and do a thought experiment and say, what position would you have been in had this guy not have been here at all, to determine whether he's caused you a loss, whether you suffered a loss by his breach. Thagos Ashri says, no, you don't have to go that far back in time. You just say, did he cause you a loss relative to what he agreed to do for you? He agreed to play the chasana, right? Relative to that commitment, was it a davar avod? Did you suffer a loss? Yes. And he's chayav to pay. So you see how there are two different ways of trying to discern whether it's avod?
Is there a large one focused on whether or not the loss is in the garment has to be financial or not financial?
I'm not sure about that. I don't think so. I don't think that's really the issue yet. Why do you think financial makes a difference here? Because of garment?
Yeah.
So let's not assume for now that the only losses that would be covered by garment are financial losses.
Okay.
Let's assume that at least l'chatchila, you have a right not to be harmed, even if it's a non-monetary harm. What do you think they're arguing about? What do you think the Machlokas and the Rashba and the Gaon Ashri are arguing about? Everybody see factually what the difference is?
Yeah.
Conceptually, what do you think they're disagreeing about?
Yair. I think the difference is the
Machayev
of the
Nezikin
by Davar Aved.
Machayev of Davar Aved. Yeah, who says what?
The Rashba says that the paradigm is fundamentally in a Nezikin and a Garmi based paradigm.
Yeah.
Damage only when there would be damage.
That's right.
The Gaon Ashri is modeled after
contract.
Some kind of contract.
Right, that's exactly right. Remember, one of the unique things about a contract is that the contractual agreement sets the expectation for what and the normative entitlement for the job to be done, right? And so for contracts, it makes sense to gauge the loss relative to the expectation created by the agreement. That's the whole point of the agreement, right? Especially if you view the agreement as like a transfer of a property right. The band player now transfers the right to you to have him play at the band and will gauge harm based off the transfer of that right. Nezek doesn't particularly factor in those kinds of like commitments and agreements. Nezek wants to know, absent this guy's participation, what harm did I suffer? In this case, nothing. So I think Yair is right to say the Rashba is thinking of Davar Aved almost in Nezek terms. Tagos Ashri is thinking of Davar Aved, to use Adam's formulation, the Rashba is thinking in Davar Aved as endogenous principle that's not related to the agreement per se. It's a general principle of Nezikin that just comes into effect in this relationship. Nothing to do with Schiris Poland per se. The Hagos Ashri is thinking of this principle as a contract principle. It's not endogenous, but
It's not quote-fit.
Indigenous.
It's the opposite of that, which is?
Exogenous. Exogenous.
Oh, it's endogenous. Right, sorry, sorry. Well, exogenous.
It's endogenous and exogenous. Right. I would have said this is exogenous.
Can we just say external and internal? Why can't we just say external and internal? So for the Rashba, it's external. It's a theory of
Columbia.
Yeah. You're here to use fancy words to confuse us. No, I'm kidding.
It's Lishkin and Azekin.
Right. The Agosa Shri is thinking that it's internal and it's a principle of contract. And in fact, his whole point is that we need Dabar HaAved for those cases where Dina Degarmi won't apply. Dina Degarmi is not going to apply because it must be a case where counterfactually wouldn't have been able to hire anybody anyway. And the Chiddush of Dabar HaAved is that through the principles of contract, we're going to hold the Pova liable. See, Adam, you see how this bears on your earlier point?
Yes and no.
Okay. Fine, before we get to the no, before we get to your no, does everybody basically see the Mahalach here in... Okay. Adam.
I mean, it's a question of how you read it. The Ghost of Shri is actually biographical because he starts with Nezek.
But he rejects. He's saying Dabar HaAved must apply. He has a question. He's saying, why do we need Dabar HaAved? We know Nezek.
Right.
We know the rules of Nezek. His answer is, well, Nezek doesn't apply in certain cases. Which cases does it not apply? When this guy didn't cause the harm. Because you would have been harmed had he not shown up altogether. And it must be that Dabar HaAved applies in that subset of cases where there's no basis for Nezek liability. And I'm saying that proves that it's contract liability. As he says, kivan sheniskeru lo, since there's a contract, kvar tzrichim laso, so they have a duty to do it.
But I wouldn't say that's necessarily internal.
This is internal.
I think they're both internal.
Who's both? Both Agos HaShri and
I think
Rashba?
Internal.
No, I think the Rashba is talking about Hefsid from the vantage point of Nezikin.
Which I think is still internal.
Why is it internal to contracts?
See, my understanding, my interpretation of what's internal here is anything that follows the lines of Rabbanut Halacha where the Rabbanut do not have the need to take additional steps.
So we have different baselines for internal and external.
You're saying that the Chakana is external.
Yes, right.
Right. Right. Right.
I see anything else that follows some kind of Rabbanut line.
See, I'm going to say something really mean right now.
Go.
See, I'll preface it with you. Now what I was saying is not going to be funny, but I was going to say, you're a Columbia guy, so anything that's like internal to Halacha is like internal. You know? I'm trying to be a little more fine grained than say internal. I mean internal to the Halacha contract theory. So Nezikin is external to contract theory, right? That's the internal external that I have in mind. You have a different baseline. You're saying, I'm kidding, not Halacha, you're saying that. Oh, if it's the sui generis principles of Choshen Mishpat as opposed to like some economic consideration of a Takana.
Yeah.
That's how you're thinking about it. Yeah, fine, that's fair. But you see, shift the universe of discourse from, right, sui generis principles of Halacha to contract theory, Sirius Paulin, and then just define internal and external by stuff out.
Do you get independent by being that funny?
Well,
that's a
wrap. Wow, right.
Yeah.
That was Leah. That's the, yeah. I prefaced it fine. It wasn't funny, but had I not prefaced it with my disclaimer.
Sick yeah. burn.
Noah.
Okay, so I'm sympathetic to the Rashba, but I want to know how else the Dabar HaAved would express itself in terms of Nezikin. And also, I think that the Hagavad Ashuri's paradigm, while I understand it, I think it just undermines the entire institution of being a poet. Because the whole nature of the agreement is that it can be chozer, though.
Well, good, except for Dabar HaAved.
But
right?
If Dabar HaAved is, like...
defined by the contract?
Yeah, exactly.
True. First of all, we've already seen... This is not a new problem for the Hagavad Ashuri, right? You weren't here on Tuesday, but... this is kind of what we've been following up from here. That it's crazy how a lot of these achronim extend Dabar HaAved, such that in the back of our minds, you're like, wait a second, when does the Zchus Po'alachzar apply if, you know, it's so easy to define something as a Dabar HaAved?
Almost never.
Right. Well, I guess it, right.
Yeah,
it's kind of, right?
Yeah.
You're saying now, if the expectation set by the contract is sufficient to knock you into Dabar HaAved, And when is a poly philosopher? So it's analogous problem. I would say, though, the easy answer for that Gauss Ashri is any case when you're not, you don't have time constraints. So it's like really that it doesn't put you back at all to have this thing done tomorrow or the day after. Now, how many of those kinds of activities are there? It's a, kind of an open question. I guess it depends what you do and what your job is. I guess in theory there are things where you're hiring people to do, but they're not really urgent.
Right.
You know, as long as it's taken care of in the next like week or so, or you know, next month or whatever. And then the chuslach would apply in all those cases. Mm-hmm. That would be the easy answer.
So it only applies to consultants, but it doesn't apply to teachers.
But whatever the domain is, that
right.
There's no real like urgent time frame.
Okay,
Bernie Shaw. Yeah. No, you were about to say something? Oh, sorry. Why did I call you Noah? Donnie. Yeah. Donnie. No. All right. Sorry.
No, was it when you say put back? Does that mean economically or because that goes back.
Yeah.
This is
an interesting point. This is a good point. So Donnie's actually saying, maybe this helps you, Noah. Actually, I think it's a helpful point. I think actually maybe I recall maybe the Pesach Choshen had a bit of a din about this. Interesting point you're making. Donnie's wondering when the Hagos Ashri has this chiddush about the contract setting the expectation for what constitutes a loss, would that be limited to real monetary losses? Or would he say even for the as Yair said, thwarting your preferences? Right?
The Ashri explicitly says, the Gabi Chalilin pure foreign.
Yeah.
Nami the Leka Hefted Mama and so far I know.
Yeah.
Explicitly not.
Mm-hmm. We got another Nami Leka Hefted Mama and so far I know.
That's fine. It just ends up being the more expansive position of the Machne Efrat. I mean, of the Machne Efrat.
The frustration of your will.
Yeah.
Right, like what we saw today in the Machne Efrat.
Yeah.
You said that with Mishar SS. Right. Right, so I think Yair is right that the fact that he immediately points to the Chalil and the Puripurim, that suggests that it's even the thwarting of your desires, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Let me get one other nafkamina out here, and this will help us get traction on this fundamental, you know, this fundamental question about the Mechayiv. Take a look at this psak of the Shulchan Aruch and Shin Lamed Gimel. Hey. The Ramah. What do you say? Oh, the Shlach.
There's really no way to go.
So, no, why don't you read that Haggah for us, the Ramah. Ho'el sha'asa b'chinam.
Ho'el sha'asa b'chinam im ba'al mayim. Yachol la'atzer afilu b'davar av.
Yeah, so this comes from a Tshuva the Ma'arik. The question is, he was asked about a Po'el who's working for free. So I guess you can imagine, you know, you're an NCSY, Kolel Madrich, or... And you do any of these programs where you're sort of employed, but you're not paid. And so the question is, can they demand that you not leave in the middle, / if you breach, that you'll cover their costs of replacing you if you're never being paid in the first place? Okay? Now, this tshuva was asked from Arik and Simon Kuflam and Gimel, this question. And you could see, he says, Al devar ru'uvein shevtiach shimon leshtadil ba'avur ochinam. So Reuven was going to work for Shimon for free, but the costs were going to be covered. So you can imagine, Sly Kolel says, we'll pay for your airfare, and we'll pay for your room and board, and your trips, but you're not getting a salary. So, and then you back out. Could the camp or whatever argue that this is a davar havud, you have no right to back out, and if you do, you're liable to be on the hook to cover their costs of replacement or their monetary losses. And the Shoel even says, is this Dome? He says, Ha'im yesh ledamoso lehahid esochar le'enomatan deperek omnim. Right? Does this rise to the level of a davar avod? So notice what he says. He says, Lanias daiti, ein nir ledamoso klal. It's not analogous to davar avod. Dehasam davka hu desochar le'enomatan mishum deniskiru lo lasos melachto. Because they were... He says they were hired, they were rented, they were acquired. I would just say they were contracted to do melacha. V'chi hadri buhu avdi shalokedin Shehare Schirin o Kablanin Ninhu, Velo Matsil Maheder Behu. Right? Because they have a duty to finish the job, right? That's why they're not allowed to back out in the Dabra Ave. And even though generally Paul Yochalachs are in the Dabra Ave, they're not allowed to. Right? So he's saying that this is unique to Schirus, where you actually contract somebody and you're paying them, where they have a duty to do the whole job and whatever, then they're not allowed to back out. But then he says, because they have a duty to finish the job, Me'achar Shekein, Afilu Po, B'davar Aved, She'ein Yochal Lachzerbok, Shul Chozerbok, V'rotz Lafkiya Schiruso, Shalok Din, because they're not allowed to back out, if he does, Din Hu She'yehei Halah Socher Aleinu Matan Midina O Miknasa. It's an interesting formulation. Because he has a duty to finish the job, it's mistaver that there's an obligation to cover the Bala Bias's costs, either Mi'ikar Adin or Miknasa. How would you translate that in fancy English, Adam? Medina Miknasa? Well, I would say Medina is endogenous, and Miknasa would be exogenous. Well, is it indigenous or endogenous?
Endogenous.
Androgynous.
One's, I think Medina would be internal, and Miknasa would be external, right? So he's saying, I'm not taking a stance on whether the reason that the remedies here are Mi'ikar Adin or they're external, Medina or Miknasa, but I know that the remedies are only going to exist when you have a real obligation to complete the job, if you're a real socher. Aval hacha b'nidon hazeh, shelo hayiru b'notel shum schar mishimon. Velo niskar lo lasos milachto, he wasn't being paid, and he wasn't a niskar, acquired. Interesting way to translate that, we'll get to that in a second. He hadar be efshar delav shelo kedin avad, maybe it's permissible for him to back out, and therefore there's no liability. Right? We won't say shelo kedin avad, dinema sheyiskar alav omatan. The whole din of sochel of omatan doesn't apply in this case because he wasn't being paid, and lo niskar lo lasos malakto. And that's where the Ramah gets this idea, where he says, poel she'osa b'chinam abal bayis yochol lachzor afilu b'davar avod. So the question is, what's the Marik saying? What's the underlying reason here? I read you his words. What's his argument that the exception of davar avod will not apply to a worker who's not being paid?
Is this the contractual argument again?
So what do you mean?
That when the person's not being paid, there's no real contract.
So. I do think that's what he's saying. It's interesting that you... I think he's actually a little ambiguous. I think that's what he's getting at. Notice he says, I'll just highlight the... Mm-hmm. He says, Aval halcha b'nidon hazeh shelo hayiruvei notel shum schar mishimon. So he's not being paid. V'lo niskar lo lasos malacha. And it sounds like... And he's not contracted. Yeah. So, it's a little ambiguous. Is he saying that the fact that you're not being paid halachically makes it that there's no real contract? Mm-hmm. And then there's some essential connection in halacha between, you know, you're being acquired through schirus and there being a real kinyan? Because in nafkamina, let's say you're not being paid but you signed a contract, you know, maybe he just thinks the halacha doesn't recognize that middle category. Like, the only way you could really be acquired through a contract is if there's schirus and you're being paid. And he's saying the reason why there's no davar ha'aved liability is because there's no contract. Right, Donnie?
Yeah.
So I think that's a really nice raya that the Marik's thinking that the liability in Davar Ha'aved is internal to contracts. Right? There's no non-contractual basis for liability. Nizikin is not sufficient. Right? I think that's exactly what comes from this Maharik. In fact, it's not my diak. I think the Pesach Choshen makes this diak, and he's right on here. Pesach Choshen's he's back in our good
good
graces.
It's as important as your prime in the 21st century.
Right. So, you know, you missed on Tuesday when the Pesach Choshen let us down. So, look what he says here in bottom of page 46. He cites in Ha'ara Chaf Gimel. I think he's putting it exactly correct, right? Because if it were midin mazik, it shouldn't matter that were you contracted? Are you being paid? The whole point is that you harmed him by allowing him to rely on you. And the fact that the Ma'arik limited the case of being paid shows that this the Mechayev here is no bad from theories of contract. Okay, so what we have now on the table, we'll stop in 30 seconds, is really two different bases of liability for Davar Avid. The contract basis, the tort basis. What I want to kind of develop a little bit next time is an in-between view that Achiv Mitam Arev, special Achiv of inducing somebody to rely on you, which is, we'll see, Rishonim interpret as a kind of Hischaivos Midas. That there's an implied understanding that if I convince you to expend money at my promise, that implicitly I'm accepting liability to cover those costs. So it's like a kind of like a separate arrangement of an understood side deal.
So that when it was the case,
Marie? Marie, yeah.
Yes, that would be.
It might be relevant in that case.
Yeah. Once we have an understanding,
exactly.
It doesn't get to the level of contract.
But correct, but it's a separate understanding. So you'll see he actually entertains this. Go back to the Marik for 1 second. The next line in the Marik on page 45. He says, "V'yafal gav shehotzi ma'osav al smach divir Reuven." Even though, right, he induced him to expend money, who de'ifsid anafshe? He's saying it wasn't a reasonable reliance. He should have known that he can't rely on.
Ones are not paying.
Yes, exactly. So, and I think there he's saying, "Hey, what about this separate mechayiv of arei hotzi mamon al piv? Oh, that's not relevant for this other reason." So we'll talk about that. So next week we'll talk a little bit more about these two different mechayiv of tort versus. Contract, we'll talk a little bit about Hotzi Mamon Al Piv, and then we'll try to wrap up this question of the underlying Mechayiv of Davar Aved. Alright, and after that, we'll talk about the actual remedies of Davar Aved. Sofer Aleha and Mata and Tashlumin. That's the plan going forward.
Next.